You're listening to the FQXI podcast.
But in the meantime, much has been happening in the world of physics. First up, astronomers have used the Edges telescope in Western Australia to detect light from the cosmic dawn. That is, light from the very first stars to have formed in the universe, just 180 million years after the Big Bang. The team was led by Judd Bowman, an astronomer at Arizona State University in Tempe.
Yes, it's a really exciting result that was reported in Nature in February, which confirms what astronomers thought about when the first stars appeared. But at the same time, the discovery has opened up a new mystery about what was going on in the early universe, because the signal they found was more than double the strength that the astronomers expected, and they really aren't sure why. Earlier, I spoke with Renan Bakana, a cosmologist at Tel Aviv University in Israel, who published a companion piece in the same issue of Nature, trying to solve the puzzle of the strangely strong signal. His solution, if correct, could tell us some new things about dark matter. But before getting to that, Bakana began by telling me how the team of astronomers set about finding signs of this light from the first stars, which is so hard to see directly from ground-based telescopes.
So when we look in the universe, the farther away we look, the farther back in time we see, just because it takes the light so long to get to us. If you want to explore the early universe, early times, you have to look so far away that stars and even galaxies, which we expect to have been fairly small at these early times, they become very, very hard to detect. So if you're talking about very early times when stars first began to form in the universe, we don't really expect to be able to see anything from that time directly, with planned new telescopes. I work in a field where theorists like me have been predicting for 15 or 20 years that there should be an indirect way to learn when stars began to form in the universe and what their properties were, and that is through radio waves. Briefly, the idea is that the universe at that time was full of gas, mostly hydrogen gas, and theorists predicted that when the first stars formed, the radiation coming out of these stars affected the gas in a way that caused it to produce some signal in radio waves. That's why people have been, for about a decade, various collaborations of radio astronomers have been building radio telescopes and detectors to try to detect this signal, this early cosmic radio signal that should indicate to us the formation of the first stars.
And so when you talk about this characteristic signal, we're talking here about looking at the cosmic microwave background, is that right? The relic radiation from the Big Bang. And we're looking at sort of a specific kind of dip in that radiation. Is that the idea?
Yes, exactly. So the cosmic microwave background is actually a remnant of a much earlier time, before there were any stars, and the universe was very hot and full of light. And that light today we see as microwave and radio waves. As I said, when the stars form, they turn on a feature in the gas, in the hydrogen gas, that should absorb the radio waves that fill the universe. So it basically should block the cosmic microwave background at certain wavelengths. And this is the absorption that we're talking about, which was observed now for the first time in this new EDGES experiment.
Right, okay, so this EDGES experiment, as you say, so that's EDGES for the Experiment to Detect the Global Epoch Reionization Signature. So this is a radio telescope out in Western Australia, and as you say, they've seen this dip at 21 centimetres, and so, you know, this sounds very exciting. This sounds like, you know, light from the first stars. How did you first find out about this result, and how exciting was it to you to hear about it?
I've been collaborating with observers, including with the EDGES experiment, and they contacted me because they think that for the first time they see what seems like a signal, which they had been checking for months to make sure it was correct, and it seemed to be indeed there on the sky. The signal was as expected in terms of at what time the stars formed, and this we can recognize based on the wavelengths of the radio waves, because as the universe expands, the wavelengths of these radio waves expand with it as well. So that is a sign that tells us from how early in the universe is this signal coming. So all of that was fine. It was as expected. But they actually contacted me with a big puzzle because the strength of the absorption was completely outside the full range of theoretical predictions. So it seemed basically an impossibly strong signal. And they asked me if I had any kind of explanation for that.
Wow, okay, so both exciting and surprising. So they did find the characteristic dip where they expected to, you know, and they measured a drop in radiation. It was about like a 0.1% drop in radiation, I think. But it was, you know, twice what they expected, or twice what theoreticians had been predicting. So, you know, so they came to you and said, you know, what's going on here? So, you know, what did you think?
That's right. I mean, so this is an interesting interaction between theory and experiment, right? Whether you believe each of them depends on their interaction. So you would be more skeptical of the observation as well until you can come up with at least some theoretical explanation. And really, they had no idea what that could be. I mean, it was clearly indicating that they're seeing something beyond just the first star, beyond what was the original goal of this observation. So then I thought about it, and it seemed that the way to explain this is that the gas, the cosmic gas, at that time was colder than the coldest that we think it could have been, because it turned out that the colder the gas is, the stronger it absorbs these radio waves. But then the next question, so the next logical step was, how can it be so cold? What could possibly cause it to be cold? So here, the point is that it's very easy to heat things up. If you think like a heater in your room, there's no such thing that actually cools your room. To cool your room, the way an air conditioner works, it doesn't actually absolutely cool the room. It actually has to throw the heat outside of the room. So that's a big fundamental physical difference between heating and cooling. So to cool down the gas, you actually need it to interact with something else, which takes its heat away. And for that to happen naturally, something else has to be even colder than the gas.
Right, I see.
We're talking about this early time in the universe when stars are only beginning to form. So that actually the gas throughout the universe is extremely cold at that time. It's the coldest that it will ever be, because earlier the universe began very dense and hot. Everything was very hot. Over time, it expanded and cooled down. But and later, once stars begin to form, their radiation, as I mentioned, heats up the gas. So the gas today is again very hot. So there's this little period, which is exactly this cosmic dawn era, before there are too many stars, when the gas is the coldest it will ever be. So it's very hard to imagine what can be even colder and cool down the gas. And then it hit me that basically the only candidate that we know of in terms of a component of the universe that can be even colder is the dark matter.
Dark matter, you know, this is a substance that astronomers believe we have, again, sort of indirect evidence for.
Exactly.
It makes up most of the matter in the universe, but it's sort of invisible to see using normal telescopes. It's something we kind of infer its existence because it has a kind of gravitational effect on visible matter. At least that's what we kind of think, that the only way it really interacts is through gravity.
Right. But because through gravity, we know that there's a lot of missing mass out there. Gravity is simply too strong in our galaxy and other galaxies, is too strong to be explained by the mass that we know, that we can see from stars and gas. So it's actually most of the mass in the universe. And so that's why it's considered a very big puzzle and mystery, not only in astronomy, but in physics generally. What is dark matter? What is this main component of mass in the universe? So this potential idea was very, very exciting, and I began to think about it, and I made a detailed model, detailed calculation, and it seemed to work very well to explain this very deep absorption signal of the radio waves through this combination that on the one hand you have the dark matter, which is cooling down the ordinary matter, and on the other hand you have the signal that we expected, which is that the first stars, their radiation turns on the ability of the gas to absorb. So when you combine the dark matter and the first stars, you can get the signal that was absorbed, observed.
As you say, we don't know what dark matter really is. So in your model, are you thinking of the most prevalent theory of dark matter that's out there? Or are you thinking of dark matter that perhaps has different properties or can interact with visible matter in a different way?
Right. So that's quite an interesting question. So for this cooling to occur, the dark matter would have to interact with ordinary matter in some way, with some force that might be analogous to an electric force, but not exactly the regular electric force that we know, but something similar, something that would be in addition to the gravitational interaction. So, you know, if this is verified by additional observation, then this is a first additional clue about what the dark matter is made of. But one nice conclusion which came out doesn't depend at all on the details of these interactions. And that is that actually that the leading idea for dark matter cannot be correct, because the leading idea for dark matter predicts that dark matter should consist of heavy, fairly heavy particles. However, if the dark matter were heavy, it turns out that even if it interacted with the ordinary matter, it would not be able to cool it down. So the dark matter actually has to be made up of light particles for this cooling to explain the radio signal.
And so, you know, this is, you know, this is tremendously exciting, as you say. You're kind of thinking about a different type of dark matter and maybe giving us some clues for how to look for this. Are there any experiments that are currently looking for this specific type of dark matter or these kinds of potential interactions? Or is this something where people could go away and now, you know, on the basis of this, perhaps try and see if they can develop an experiment that could test this idea?
Right. So there actually are a number of very big experiments, very large efforts to detect dark matter in labs. The hope is that a dark matter particle, if it goes through your lab, it might produce some kind of light signal if it interacts with this material in your lab. Now, the experiments to date that have been run have focused, again, on this leading idea for dark matter, which predicts heavy particles. So they are actually not sensitive to light particles. And despite the large efforts, no dark matter has been detected, and it's been getting frustrating. So even before this, people have been thinking about new types of approaches, you know, going to new experiments that would be looking in new directions for lighter particles. So this new clue from astronomy suggests that we should go in different direction than where people have been looking thus far.
And, you know, talking about this theme of other experiments, people are still quite cautious, you know, including, you know, the authors and the scientists on the edges experiment to say, you know, as you mentioned yourself, when they first saw this surprising result, they took a lot of time to check it and recheck it because it sort of, you know, it had these very interesting and exciting implications. And there are other experiments out there, and we're hoping that they will confirm this result. So perhaps you could tell us a little bit about the other experiments that maybe will be looking to see if they see the same result.
There are two levels of confirmation here. One would be to just confirm the signal itself in the radio wave, that it's really this surprising signal is correct and it's on the sky and coming from you know, the early universe. And then the second confirmation would be this dark matter explanation. But as you mentioned, the good news is that this whole field of studying the early universe, cosmic dawn through radio waves, is only beginning. I mean, this is the first successful measurement in this field, but there are indeed many efforts to measure this. And this first experiment, it provides relatively limited information because what it measures is the average intensity of radio waves on the sky. And there are going to be more experiments of this type that will try to verify the signal. But within hopefully a few years or slightly more, I mean, there are a number of much bigger efforts coming, and those will be made up of very large numbers, thousands of radio antennas that will be able to produce for us full images of the radio sky, which means the intensity of radio is coming from different directions on the sky. And for that, for example, the dark matter model makes a very specific prediction of the pattern of radio waves that is expected. So this would be a much clearer test and give us a lot more information and confidence. It will probably take a few years to happen, but now this result, this potential, you know, gold mine and dark matter is going to boost the whole field. So hopefully things will, you know, advance more quickly than we thought. I mean, I would just emphasize the big picture that it's again an example of where physicists have looked in a new regime at the time of the universe where we don't have any other observations. And the first time we measure something, it's a big surprise. So it's kind of nice that nature continues to surprise us, even though we think we know quite a bit of astronomy and physics.
Thank you to Renan Barkana for chatting with Zia. On the podcast page, www.fqxi.org/community/podcast, we're linking to news articles with more information about the discovery, and also to an interesting blog post by astronomer Aaron Parsons of University of California, Berkeley, who urges caution, noting that the observed signal might be an artifact of the way that the measuring instrument works, rather than a true measure of an astronomical effect.
Yes, and it's for these reasons and others like that that Parkhana notes that astronomers will be eagerly waiting to see if other experiments can corroborate these findings. Independent experiments such as the Hydrogen Epoch of Reionization Array in development in South Africa, or LOFAR, the Low Frequency Array, in Europe.